Welcome to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on June 16th, 2013.
Hello, everybody. This is John. Glad to be here with you. Glad to see you here. Lately, as interest in our work has grown, we've seen an upsurge in confusion about the relationship between what we're doing here and the ancient wisdom teachings. Some seem to think that the look is a version of the Upanishadic teachings from India, perhaps a form of self-inquiry. Some see it as a watered-down version of other more developed and substantial practices, too simple to be of any use to serious seekers after truth. Many see it as being just like somebody or other in the current crop of active or recently dead modern spiritual teachers. Quite likely, some even see it as a con game, but that would be a hard case to make in the face of the fact that we charge nothing and require nothing for access to everything we know. In any event, it's past time to try to settle this matter once and for all. We have much to do here and little free time to spend on issues like this, which really have nothing whatsoever to do with our work. Please believe that this is not an attempt to repudiate any spiritual practice. I seek only to put an end to the idea that the looking is one, because it's distracting. Truth is that if the looking is a spiritual teaching, it's a teaching the like of which I've never seen before. It promises very little. It promises no liberation from the wild storm of life, no safe haven of emptiness and bliss. It has nothing to say about the true self or false self or about any self at all. It has no anointed teachers. It has no doctrine. And in my own experience, it has done nothing for me at all, other than to disintegrate the false distrust of my own life and bring me safely home to that life at last. And if it does almost nothing, it requires even less. It requires no new understanding, no new understanding of or belief in anything, including belief in the act itself. Nor does it require the abandonment of any understanding and belief. It requires no payment of money and no allegiance to any person or institution. It requires nothing at all other than one simple movement of conscious attention, trying to get one simple taste of the pure sensation known to you as me. This is the taste of pure person in the heart of the mind. And it requires nothing but to do it once. The particular way in which the outcome of the looking plays out is entirely idiosyncratic, although it most always includes some confusion as the results of the looking begin to play out in the mind. It encourages self-reliance. It contends against nothing. It blames no one. It judges nothing, and it proposes neither the abolishment nor the creation and support of any particular organized human activity. It came to be seen by us in the insight that all of our own self-hatred and hatred of others, all of our own self-defeating and aggressive habits of behavior and relationship, and all of our own misery and disappointment in ourselves and in our lives had one simple root cause, which is the fear of life itself. We have come to see that this fear of life comes upon almost all of us at birth through no one's fault, when the shock and violence of our arrival sets the context and contaminates the soil in which our entire psychology, all of our understandings, all of our bedrock assumptions, all of our likes and dislikes will take form. We see the fear of life to be a kind of psychological autoimmune disease. It seeks to protect us from the danger of being alive by holding life at arm's length, lest we fall in, I suppose, and perish. It warps the lenses of personal psychology through which we perceive the meaning, validity, and likely effect of everything that happens to us, with us, within us, and around us. It creates and maintains the delusion that life is not trustworthy, that life is not safe. Now, when I first decided to do a talk on this question of whether the looking is spiritual, I thought that I would call attention to the ways in which the old teachings have fallen into false ideas predicated on the assumption of a preferable spiritual mode of life that was hidden from us by our ignorant attachment to worldly matters. I thought that I might try to show how the teachings themselves were little more than arguments in favor of running from the fear into womb-like states of total dissociation from life. And I thought I might use that to point to the most fundamental difference between the looking and the teachings, which is that the looking brings us into complete immersion with the same life that the teachings despise. But then I remembered how the appearance of those ancient attempts to understand and solve the deep puzzle of human misery broke my own entrancement with hopelessness and cynicism and set me on the path that led me here to be with you. And I decided not to bother with that. Because the spiritual teachers, you see, are not the problem. The injustice of the economic system is not the problem. The war drums beginning now to crescendo once again are not the problem. Fear is the problem, which spawns all the rest. And when the fear goes, all that is false and self-destructive in us goes with it. No one who is naturally and fearlessly engaged in the richness of their own lives will ever knowingly cause harm to anybody else. Imagine a world free of neurotic fearfulness and anxiety. This is what we believe the looking can bring about. Nothing spiritual about it. So the purpose of our work, then, is nothing more than to bring to humanity the idea that our misery is not of our doing and might easily be cured with one simple, harmless act of inward looking, with the mind's eye. A simple act of inward looking that could change everything. So instead of railing against our past false starts and ancient misunderstandings, I think it would be best just to do that simple act together now. Okay? To begin with, just sit quietly for a moment or two, just long enough to settle your mind and allow the energy of what you've just heard from me to fade a little. You are not trying to prove or disprove anything here. You're merely trying to get a direct taste of the faint feel of you here. Most people find it easiest to do with eyes closed. Okay? Now, first, notice the symphony of sensations and perceptions about sensation rising and falling. Notice the calling and releasing of attention by sensation and thought about sensation. There's nothing whatsoever you need to do about any of it. Just familiarize yourself with the feel of being alive for a moment or two. Now, notice that once you form the intent to do so, you can move your attention to one or another sensation or perception pretty much at will. Watch that for a moment. Now, move that beam of attention around in your mind and body, looking for the feel of what you would call me. You will find it to be a very faint, calm, clear, and light sensation, barely noticeable in the background of all other sensations and thoughts. This simple sensation that I'm asking you to look for is hidden from most of us for most of our lives by the noise and stench of the fear. If you see it, you will recognize it to be just what you feel like to yourself, and nothing more or less. And that's it. And as strange as it might seem, it really doesn't matter whether you actually felt or recognized that simple taste of you. If you follow the instructions, it is as close to certain as can be that you have succeeded, and that you will soon notice some of the effects of what you have done begin to appear. Pay attention to your life. It is the source of all satisfaction, and there is nothing spiritual or unspiritual about it. Okay? We're going to take a 10-minute break now and then come back to have a conversation together about this. We can talk about anything that seems important to you, but if possible, it would be a great help to us if we could focus on the issue of settling this business of whether there is anything spiritual about the looking so that we can put it to rest once and for all. Thank you for your time. Okay, I'm back. I see a couple of people. Adrian and Mike arrived after the talk, so you two don't know what we're talking about except for what is on the screen there. Again, we could talk about anything you guys want to talk about, but it would be most helpful to us to get out into the air this whole business about this relationship between the spiritual teaching and what we're doing, so that we can put it to rest one way or the other. But I'm happy to talk about anything you want to talk about. So I'm here. Just raise your hand if you want to talk, and we can have a conversation. It's good to be here with you. Marlo?
Hi, John.
Hi.
Good morning. It's still morning.
It is still morning here.
Yes. I have certainly thought a lot about the spiritual perspective, having come from that perspective with more than a 40-year history, and having come to it through a form of an awakening that happened to me, an event that, you know, as you discuss, comes and goes and doesn't have that much significance. But it got me onto the spiritual path, and I certainly have explored different areas of it in some depth. And always with a feeling that the deepest inside of me was not reached through that, and a sadness about that. And so, more recently, I had already, before I encountered you, been withdrawing from what I saw as the spiritual path. But still, all of my connections and kin are in that path, and when I listened to you and I thought about that, I sort of felt really sad about that falling away. So I had to really look carefully at what I thought the difference was. And what most recently I've observed is that spiritual paths always come within a context of, I mean, okay, this is my perception, of handling the fear of the world. There are, yes. It seems to me, certainly in yes. my life, it's been a response. That was what I wanted it for, and it didn't do it. And so that, to me, is the most, perhaps, significant difference, is that, you know, each spiritual path is embedded in a culture of one kind or another, Eastern, Western, you know, all the other differentiations. And, you know, you've never said anything disrespectful about any of that, because, as you pointed out, there's wonderful, you know, information. But it's not necessary. And it can sort of pull people short, because it is a fear-based context. That's the fear of letting go of it, is, well, then I'll have nothing, or there'll be nothing there for me, or something like that. But that's fear-based. So anyhow, those are just some of my recent thoughts on all this.
Yes, and I agree with you that I've noticed that too, is that the sought for effect of the spiritual teachings are all directed toward conditioning the mind in a way that produces some equilibrium in a system that's really chaotic and really kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is, you know, and these teachings are, these practices, not the teachings, but the practices are, you know, unevenly effective at providing that. And, but, you know, that's the case. That's what I see to be the truth, too. They speak to the mind that is paralyzed and sickened by the fear. Mm-hmm. And try to suggest to that mind strategies and methodologies whereby some reconciliation can be made with the craziness itself. Either that, or the other extreme is a complete withdrawal from involvement in the mind's activities and so forth. But in both cases, it is a reaction to the cloud of fear that's there, either to escape from it back into quietude, or to find a way of achieving some equilibrium. I see that too. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. You know, I mean, really, I like you, I didn't have 40 years of spiritual investigation, but I had a really intense 10 years of it. And most of it happened while I was in a situation in which my entire attention could be focused entirely on that activity and that aspiration, that yearning, right? I had huge experience of spiritual awakening. I had a year of kind of floating on clouds, I guess. I don't know exactly how to characterize it. It was, but it was mostly denial in retrospect. And when it came crashing down, I too really felt the agony that arose, because the feeling that I, in withdrawing from that spiritual yearning, especially withdrawing from that yearning and not being in love with that yearning, that I was doing something really, really wrong. fundamentally sinful, fundamentally against humanity. You know, because humanity's greatest product of in art and literature and drama and all of those, and philosophy and all of that, is the is precisely the feeding of that yearning, the following of that yearning, the celebration of that yearning. And so I felt like I was doing something really against humanity when I started to turn my back on the yearning as something useful or worthwhile. So I'm familiar with that too. The thing about it is that, as I said, I don't have anything against it. It's just that we're doing something different here. And if it seems to impinge in that realm, I can't help that. But we're doing something different here. We're trying actually to bring an end to the insanity of the human species with a very, very simple, practical solution. Okay?
Absolutely. It's very subtle. It's very subtle. It's taken me over 2 years now to even... I don't think I've begun to penetrate what this is. But it is subtle, and I think that's been a challenge, because we are used to just being involved in the whole outer show. It's a very subtle, different change of direction. But once it's accessed, I believe, like you said, like I've heard you say, that it's always there. It's always there. That becomes clearer.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marla. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you, you as well.
Lita?
You said something that I may have missed. You said you turned away from the yearning, but I didn't catch exactly what the yearning was for that you were talking about.
The yearning to be free of the need to yearn, I guess. It's the yearning that's at the heart of the spiritual energy. It's the yearning to find a solution, to find absolution, to find peace, to find an end to the constant need to look for something to make me feel better. It's that yearning, that human yearning to break out of the limitations of the human experience.
You talked about it as, though not, unless I missed something, it sounded like you were talking about, you said that it was a yearning, that you felt bad turning away from it because it seemed like the yearning that the art and music was about this? Like that this
Everything.
Is what all of culture is about?
Yes. Yes, and it is most overtly present in philosophy, metaphysics, and spiritual aspiration, and religion, of course.
The yearning to feel better, or the yearning for purpose, or all of that? Basically, any yearning?
No, I'm talking, well, I don't know. Let's not parse this too fine. All right, you must be familiar at some time in your life, and perhaps even still, but I kind of doubt it, you must be familiar with having this sense that maybe is not articulated, but it's a energetic need to find something that will fill that need. It's a feeling that there's something missing here, that there's something wrong here, that this should not be the way that life is, and that since it's wrong and it should not be this way, there must be a way for me to make it right. There must be a way for me to find an answer, a solution, an end to this veil of tears that seems to be the nature of most human life. And I'm certain that you've felt it, Lita, haven't you? You know what I'm talking about. You've had a spiritual practice.
I'm feeling it right now, which is why I'm asking about it. This community that I'm in is just, I'm experiencing quite a bit of pain. And I'm just wondering, like, I don't know if I can continue here, but this feels like something I'm committed to. So, yeah, I was talking to a friend yesterday, somebody you know from your, and he's been doing a lot of work around repentance, finding your own part in it, things like that. And I got on the phone with him yesterday to talk about it because he was, you know, walking through it, and I started telling him, here's what's going on, and instead of helping me find my part in it, he kind of responded with, oh my God, why are you still living there? That's abusive, it's horrible. right. So yes, I am struggling, and I keep trying and trying and trying to make things better, inside and out, and it's a roller coaster. Sometimes it works, and it barely hangs on.
What causes you to try? What causes you to try to make things better in and out? What's wrong with things in and out that needs to be changed?
Well, partly it's painful, and partly I feel like I'm doing it for other people. I can see the pain that's going on in the person who's doing this. Partly I feel like it's old patterns, and if I don't solve it now, it's just going to keep happening, which I, you know, in the roller coaster, sometimes I just go, okay, it's pain, okay, I'll just feel that, okay. I've got ego parts that there are reasons I'm doing this. If there are parts where I feel like I'm contributing, and I partly like that and partly feel like it's a thing to do. And if I have to suffer some, well, I suffer some.
You know, this is a really difficult question to, conversation to have with the difficulty in trying to, hear you and speak to you over the racket.
Oh no. But. Oh, that's terrible. How can there be a racket? Okay,
but
go ahead.
Why not? But I, why don't you just give up? It's okay to give up.
And go home?
If that's what it is. If you're not helping people. If you're not helping people,
no, I feel like I am.
If you're making yourself miserable.
Well, I feel like I am helping, and I feel like if I can fight through it, it will resolve things, and I feel like if I don't, I've been in this situation before in other contexts, not quite as extreme, and I feel like if I don't fight through it, it's going to arise again.
But, okay.
Maybe
but,
that's superstition.
But listen to me, Lita. Why not give up trying to do away with that, then? All that
do
stuff
away
is with the trying to do this and trying to do that and trying to do the other thing. Why not just try to do this, try to do that, try to do the other thing? You know? I mean, what about what's happening? Wait, listen to me. I'm really trying to get an answer here. I'm trying to ask a question that I haven't got clear. What is the problem with the situation that you're in that causes you so much pain, that causes you so much psychological pain?
Are you asking about an internal answer or, like, the circumstance? I don't think you're asking me what the circumstances are.
No, I'm asking you, what is it about the circumstances that, not their nature, but why are you in pain? Because the circumstances are as they are. What is the nature of this psychological suffering that you speak of?
I'm trying to describe it without resorting to story. The first word that comes up is disappearing.
Is what?
Disappearing.
That's the psychological pain?
I'm sitting with people, and it may be invisibility, or that I'm being held accountable for things I haven't done. People can't see me, hear me. Things are happening around me that are out of my control. I know.
I don't mean to diminish your pain, but...
I know, it's fine, but Go ahead, laugh. Somebody
I
ought
laughed.
To.
Right. I laughed.
But I sit with, there's just so much unclarity. I don't know where I am. I get lied to, or I get, it's just really hard. I know I'm not clarifying. It's hard to do without telling stories.
It sounds to me like, we sometimes torture ourselves in the name of self-improvement. If the problem you're having is the fact that you're not having an effect on the people that you're trying to be helpful to, if they're receiving no help from you, why would you stay? If what you're doing is of no use, why would you stay?
It's not the people I'm trying to help that I'm having problems with. It's one of them marginally. I'd be glad if you got help, but it's what they're doing. I mean, I can say it's what they're doing to me. See, okay, we call this not a spiritual teaching, and I'm trying to be all spiritual in this other way of like, oh, it's all my fault, whatever's happening. But the problem is, in this situation, I'm having a very hard time. Like I said, I tell this friend who this whole thing is about, look for your part and where it's your fault. And I tell him about it, he's like, that's not your fault. I'm trying to find my part, and I keep apologizing for things. I keep like it's my fault, and I'm looking for the part that's me, and it's still like it's very hard.
I don't understand what you mean when you say you're looking for the part that you. You're not a part of anything.
I'm looking for the part where I know. I guess I'm looking for.
You're trying, it sounds like you're trying to turn this into some kind of a practice.
Yeah, well.
Abandon it.
Yeah, a what?
Abandon the practice.
Abandon the practice, it's not my fault.
That's right. Just abandon that practice. Maybe it is your fault.
Uh-huh.
And what difference does that make? One way or the other?
Because it's supposed to get me more to the clarity of seeing
clarity doesn't come. Let me tell you something, Lita. And I'm really, it really hurts me that you are down there where you are. I think that you probably shouldn't have gone as quickly as you did. And it really bothers me because you're in an environment that is not really all that supportive to you. Being helpful doesn't mean the need to do what people think you should do. Being helpful means, and it doesn't mean that you're going to feel good about being helpful either. If you do helpful because you think that that'll give you a good feeling about yourself, that's a sure road to disappointment and disaster. You are helpful because there is help is needed, and the way that you are helpful is by looking at things with intelligence and clarity, the practical things that are happening on the ground with you and the people that are doing it. You look at that with intelligence and some clarity, practical clarity, looking for ways to have an effect on the little things that you can't have an effect on. You don't, if everything you do that turns out to be thwarted becomes something for you to internalize as something to torment yourself about, then all you're doing is self-mutilation. The helping is not going to give you anything. Being successful in helping these people is not going to give you anything. It's not going to make you feel good about yourself, not going to make you feel bad about yourself. The helping of these people is going to help them, not you. And the way you can be helpful is to take you, your personality, and put it aside and concentrate on an intelligent assessment of what's needed there and what step can be taken effectively, and then try to implement those. But so long as the kind of nauseating presence of the effects that the unreconciled effects of the craziness of your mind is being affected by this, you're not going to do anything except hurt yourself and others. And probably not others, because others will just shine you on and not pay much attention to you. But certainly hurt yourself. And hurting yourself is of no help to anyone. You've got to be practical and concrete and ignore really, you don't have to pay attention to the swirl of sensation and thought about sensation and thoughts about what's happening and thoughts about what you should be doing and thoughts about what you are not doing or what you are doing. You don't really have to attend to any of that at all, Lita. That doesn't give you anything. I advise you that when that nauseating environment is present, that environment of, oh, I can't do it right, and I don't know, and these people aren't helping me, and I want to help people, and I'm being a little bit of help, but obviously I don't have it, I don't know what I'm doing. When that's present, just take a breath. Just take a breath. Notice what's happening. And notice the thoughts about it. Move your attention to the actual sensation that those thoughts are referring to, just to see what it is, and then move your attention to your breath. The most important thing that you can acquire now to be helpful to you is the practical application of that methodology. And just breathe. Just breathe. The most important thing for you to do is to break your allegiance to that whole nauseating cloud of understanding, a lack of understanding, and what you should be doing and why you should be doing it differently, or why they're wrong or why you're wrong, and so forth and so on. That means nothing. It's of no use to you. It cannot help you in any way. And really, the truth is, you don't have to attend to it. Really. Nothing is going to happen if you decline to attend to that whole business. Do you hear me?
I do. And I try to do that. Yeah.
Do it more. Do it like, I mean, really, do it more. Do it whenever something is present in your mind that's unpleasant, do it. Just look at it, look at the feeling, and then go to your breath.
You know what? It's so much easier to do that when I'm alone. It's hard to do that when I'm with other people.
And that's why you should practice it when you are alone. If you practice it when you are alone, you'll gain strength and confidence and clarity in how to do it and what it actually, the effect that it actually has on your internal environment. Okay.
Here's a question for you.
Will you try that?
Yeah. Okay. I have been trying it, and I'll do it more and more and more.
More, yeah. You're in a really tough spot there. You have to be really focused and strong and determined to see this through.
And I think that's why I did it. I mean, my friend was saying yesterday, places like this, you get a lot of. Yesterday morning, we didn't go for a run because we heard there had been a shootout and there were armed men in town. I don't even care. Like, that doesn't affect me. But, like, when I'm sitting with two other people at breakfast and they don't speak to me, they only speak to each other, it's like arrows to my heart. One of them is a good friend for 10 years, and, like, they just don't speak to me. And I don't know if this is a real... I mean, the guns are violence, clear. But what's going on there, like, I don't know if it's imaginary. And maybe that doesn't matter either. Maybe it's just another cloud of stuff.
In one way of looking at it, of course it's imaginary. It's something that your mind is making of actual circumstance. It's something your mind is imagining to be the case pertaining to actual circumstance. Do that, do the mindfulness, Lita. Get good at it.
Yeah.
Get control over your attention. the only thing that's happening here, and the thing that's making you either actually ineffective, or at least you believe yourself to be ineffective, the only thing that's happening here is that distraction that comes from the constant reference to the chatter that's going on in your mind about this and that and the other thing. And a lot of that is probably of a greater intensity than it will be over time, because you're still recovering from the effects of the fear. Because that the reality of living life, totally immersed in life, is wild, and it drives the mind insane, crazy when it starts happening. So get control of your attention. That's the only thing you have any control over. You can't decide what you're going to think about anything. You can't decide what others are going to think about you. You can't decide what reaction the mind is going to have as a result of circumstances that are unfolding. The only thing you have anything to say about is what you attend to. That's not something like a talent, you know, like being able to play a musical instrument or paint or write or anything of the kind. That's a practical, actual act of the mind that needs to be practiced in order for it to gain strength. It's like lifting weights. It's not like anything else. I'm telling you, this is the most important thing right now. Get control of your attention. Get to the point where you know when you can move your attention and you know when you can't. Get to know it. Get to understand it. Focus on that. Focus on dealing with your attention. You hear that?
Thank you, John.
And listen, if you want to, this is really hard in this setting here, but if you want to talk, you know, get in touch with Carla and we'll set up a time when we can talk together about this in private. Okay?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, because I don't want to take everybody's time with it.
Okay, it's good to see you here, Lita.
Yes, it's good to talk to you too. And hi, Carla.
And work with your attention. Get control of your attention. Okay.
Yeah, that's clearly a big part of it. There are times when I feel like I miss things. There are things I just, things that are obvious, which is driving people around me crazy, too. But
right, that's right.
I don't see them because I'm in that
that's
cloud.
Right. And what happens is we think that we just need to pay, you know, like, I'll pay attention the next time. I'll get it right the next time. But that doesn't work. You have to build the strength. You have to build up the strength and the suppleness of your control over your attention, and by practice, and not by waiting for the next crisis to arrive. As you gain skill and strength in controlling your attention, you'll find that you are automatically and naturally intelligent in your relationship with circumstances as they rise and fall. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. anybody else? Again, best of all, this conversation with Lita was very important, and it's very important to understand that business about the power we have to become more in control, more supple, and more effective in doing the only thing we really can do, which is put our attention where we want it to be. But again, you know, I'll talk about anything. I very much like to put this spiritual business to rest, but that wasn't spiritual, so I guess that kind of helped things along. I'll be here for a little while longer. Talk to anybody who wants to talk to me, just raise your hand, okay? It's good to be here. Ann?
Hi, John.
Hi, Ann.
Hey, this is Ann from the Woodlands, Texas. When I first came upon your teaching, I think I really got it about the spirituality, and it was something that I already knew, but you confirmed it and put it in words. And so I really became a very avid fundamentalist. It is not a spiritual thing.
Me too.
However, what I found was that I had to relax that thought in my mind, because I found myself getting very frustrated with people who used the old ideas that I knew wouldn't help and it wouldn't work. And I would feel exasperated at the situation because people just didn't get it. And not that I was necessarily trying to pound it in their heads, but it's like, you know, you're looking for the moon and you're not going to find it if you keep looking at the ground. Okay, this is not complicated, people. You will not find the moon in the ground. And so, but what I've found is somewhat, because I actually do speak in a lot of churches and spiritual places, that I've had to devise a language and be able to talk to people in a way they can hear me, because I found when I talk in the terms that you talk, that they can't hear me. So that's just been my particular challenge with the whole thing. Because obviously, to me, it is about being present. My mind is silent. I think that you talk about how once you look, that you'll probably want to look again and again. And that is true for me, because I found that the thoughts that I have in my mind, if I follow those down the trail to conclusion, they're usually the same trails I've been on forever. And so I know that they don't lead anywhere. They don't lead to any kind of satisfaction or interest or anything. They're dead-end thoughts. So it's, whether it's a religious idea or whatever it is. So just looking and being present is the thing that always I can come back to. That's the end of it. I don't have to search anymore. However, that doesn't mean that in the spiritual arena that they're not, it's entertaining and interesting. Just like if I would go to the movies, I can go to the movies and I can watch all kinds of movies, but I can go to the spiritual teachings and I can watch all those things just like I'm watching a movie, and it doesn't mean that it has to stand in the way. I understand that it does stand in the way for people if one doesn't have the direct experience of who they are. But it after one knows, after I've known who I am, then it's like I can kind of go back into the world and not be so seduced by the spirituality. So that's my take on it.
Well, that's certainly true. And you know, I have often suggested that it may, you know, we've been doing this for a very long time. It's been, I read somewhere the other day that it's been 50,000 years since modern humans appeared on the earth. And we've been doing it for all that time, trying to find a way to make it easier, trying to find a way to get over the seeming meaninglessness and unsatisfactory experience of being alive as a human being. And in the course of that, you know, in the realms of religion, in the realms of spiritual aspiration, in the realms of philosophy and metaphysics, especially in the realms of psychology and also in the realms of economics, all of those things are approaches that we have happened upon in our incessant yearning. It's a yearning for an end to the feeling that life just sucks and it doesn't live up to its promise and so forth. And in the course of all of that, we've actually come upon some really astonishing insights into the nature of reality and into the nature of into the nature of reality. Let's just put it that way. And I myself think that although I suspect that when the world goes sane, the yearning for spiritual accomplishment, you know, a spiritual solution to the problem will probably fade away, because the problem won't exist that has called up that yearning to solve it. But those internal investigations into the nature of existence, into the nature of the nature of existence itself, will certainly continue. We are a very curious and inquisitive creatures. We are, and that is. But that's not seeking a solution there. That's just the joy of discovery of the nature of things. And I think that those investigations will continue and actually take on new life, especially in the realms of philosophy and psychology, theoretical psychology. But that's a different thing. And I'm trying to get an understanding of what it is that you're suggesting here. But this is the reason, you see, the predominance of the spiritual and religious points of view in the approach to this kind of existential, this sense of an existential problem of being human, that those approaches are, it's extremely difficult to go into a context in which those approaches are dominating the consciousness of the people that are there. So that, for example, if I went into a church and spoke to the people in church kind of cold, without them knowing anything about what's happening, I would have a great deal of difficulty, I suspect, getting their attention in the right place. It's the spiritual and the religious approaches to life are extremely resilient and resistant to hearing anything that's outside of that realm when they're in that realm. So, the whole thing about getting this thing out of that spiritual realm and having it be seen by all of us first, and then by everybody we talk to, as something that is entirely, has nothing whatsoever to do with religion or spirituality. That is, it is absolutely poses no threat to religion or spirituality, and it has nothing to take from religion or spirituality. When this work is shed of all the taste of that, then I could go in anywhere, because they would not be expecting me to come there giving them a spiritual solution or a religious solution, which they already are settled on the version that they are in at the time. Then I am coming to them clean of that assumption, so that they can hear me without having to integrate it into the spiritual and religious understandings. Do you follow that? Does that make any sense?
Yes, I do follow that. I have a philosophy that I teach, which is called Easy Osophy, and it's about giving up ego-driven struggle and suffering, and it's under the same auspices. There's not anything religious or spiritual about it. It's just pointing out how endemic suffering is in our culture and specific things that we seem entitled to suffer about, and so people don't have to think about religion or anything. They just go, oh, yeah, I suffer about that. Yeah, that's not too cool.
Right, right, exactly. Just take this whole thing out of that, so that people don't feel that they have to understand it within a context that it doesn't have anything to do with.
Right. And so when I think of it in terms of when I teach that particular principle, then I can, it makes it easier for me to understand that I already knew that. And I think, you clarified what I already knew. And I think that's one of the things I have appreciated about your teaching or non-teaching or the expansion of your principles, and that is that I can do anything I want to do in terms of, you know, beliefs or where, I mean, it's not, it doesn't prohibit anything. It doesn't prohibit religion. It doesn't prohibit anything. Nothing. It just says, do this. And yeah, it may fall away. It may not.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah, right. And that's why I'm really interested in putting this whole business of the looking being associated with some other realm, put that to rest so that we can be more effective in bringing it to people and not requiring them to set aside cherished beliefs or to somehow understand it within the context of cherished beliefs. Okay?
Yeah, and that's brilliant.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Good to talk to you, Anne. That's an important thing to see about this, is that we really want to get this to everybody. We want to get this to religious people, spiritual people, people who are seeking wealth, people who are seeking anything. We want to get, we don't want this to fall into any category requiring people to either reject what they already believe or to find a way to understand it within what they already believe. This really is something new. The truth is that, and I'm trying to think of a way to characterize it that will be, and someday I will, but the truth is that certainly it is the case that most of the spiritual teachings that people think have something to do with what we're doing here are spiritual teachings that in the course of which, that I was in the course of when they failed me and led me to this. But it doesn't mean that I repudiate all of that went before. It just so happens that I was in the middle of that activity when finally I saw what was really happening. And I do want to say one thing that and that is that actually, I learned something here today, which I'm very grateful for in the conversation with Anne. I learned how to speak, how to articulate the practical reason for getting the looking out of the spiritual realm. That practical reason being that we want to talk to everybody, and we don't. When the easiest way that people can hear us is if they don't have to hear us in a context that is such that they will feel the need either to understand it in that context, like in religious or spiritual context, or they will dismiss it outright because of the sense that it might be opposed to the beliefs that they hold. So that's very useful to me, and I hope that I can make good use of it in the future. Things are going really well, all things considered. I want to say I see that David Atkinson, I see you're here, and I thought Craig was here, but I guess not. I just want to tell you that we have pretty much completed the new version of the Oz petition, and in the early next week we will be in touch with all the people in grassroots, send them the new content and for consideration and discussion, and by the time the week is over we'll have the new Abbas petition up, and we'll start promoting it. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for being a part of this great effort that we're making here. We are very little people, but what we have been given is big beyond comprehension. We have been given this this simple act. that really seems to hold the promise of bringing an end to the insane human march to oblivion that has been driving us for so long now. So thank you for being here. Thank you for paying attention to me, and stick with us. Help us if you can. Carla has some things to say. Thank you. I love you. I'll see you next time.
You just listened to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on June 16th, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justonelook.org.